This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Waqifi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وما تكون في شأن وما تتلو وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Qur'an, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Death toll from Israeli genocide in Gaza exceeds 32,500 as regime's indiscriminate strikes claim more Palestinian lives. More than 140 Christian leaders call for a permanent Gaza ceasefire, urging the U.S. and its allies to stop arming Israel. And Jordanians gather outside the Israeli embassy in the capital Amman for a fifth consecutive night, calling on their government to cancel all treaties with Israel. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. Now it's nearly 6 months into Israel's campaign of genocide on Gaza, and the regime strikes continue killing and injuring civilians throughout the besieged territory. The latest Israeli airstrikes killed at least 12 Palestinians in a home in Rafah, south of the Gaza Strip. Eyewitnesses reported about 30 people killed by strikes in an industrial zone east of Gaza City. 8 people were also killed after occupation forces bombed a home in Al-Maghazi camp in central Gaza. The Israeli genocide has so far killed over 32,500 civilians and left nearly 75,000 others injured, and over 7,000 more are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. And now for an update from the besieged enclave, we're going to swing over to the central Gaza city of Deir Abalah, where we're joined by Moti Abu Musab, a Press TV correspondent. Hello, Moti. Hope you're safe and doing well. What can you tell us?
Actually, the Israeli genocidal war is still persistent, with more drastic airstrikes and attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip. Let's begin with Rafah City, as the Israeli warplanes carried out several frontal airstrikes against a residential building located in Al-Nasser neighborhood, which is located in the northern part of Rafah City. At least 12 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were massacred over the attack. They were inside the house when the Israeli occupation forces destroyed the house over their heads. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling the eastern part of the city of Rafah City with more intense shelling that reached the central buildings there, knowing that Rafah is still accepting roughly 1.4 million Palestinian evacuees who are still taking shelter in that area amid the continuous airstrikes and attacks. When it comes to Khan Yunis City, the current situation is still dreadful, as the Israeli warplanes maintained carrying out several airstrikes against the western part of the city, particularly the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al Amal Hospital. Those areas have been subjected to heavy bombardments and attacks for the last 3 consecutive days after the Israeli occupation forces reiterated their ground offensive against that area. Needless to mention that the vast majority of the buildings there were completely destroyed over the ceaseless and the incessant Israeli attacks and airstrikes. Even in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis City, particularly Al-Karara neighborhood, it was subjected to heavy attacks of the Israeli artillery over the last night. When it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces also committed another appalling massacre, particularly in Al-Maghazi refugee camp. At least 6 Palestinian civilians, including women and children, were murdered and killed over the attack after the Israeli occupation forces destroyed their residential building over their heads. And in Gaza City, the current situation is still over catastrophic, as the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking the Ashifa Square and the surrounding areas for the successive 12th consecutive day. With more airstrikes, more shelling, and more gunfire, towards the residential buildings there. According to multiple eyewitnesses, that the residential squares in those areas, particularly the western areas of Gaza City, became mounds of debris over the ceaseless and the continuous Israeli attacks, including the relentless Israeli airstrikes and the shelling of the Israeli tanks and the continuous gunfire. Needless to mention that hundreds of the Palestinian residential buildings and apartments were set on fire by the Israeli occupation forces, and hundreds of the residential apartments also were blasted and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces using the explosive devices. And those airstrikes and attacks were expanded to reach several residential neighborhoods inside Gaza City, like Al-Nasr, Al-Zaytun, and Al-Rimal neighborhoods. They were under heavy bombardments and attacks over the last night. When it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, particularly Jabalia refugee camp, the Israeli occupation warplanes destroyed another mosque. Dozens of the Palestinian casualties were reported over that attack. So the Israeli attacks are still continued targeting elsewhere in Gaza Strip amid dreadful and catastrophic humanitarian conditions that are still befalling and that are still befalling the Palestinian civilians across the Gaza Strip. Over to you.
Moti, you very well know a handful of days ago, less than a handful of days ago, the UN Security Council passed that resolution calling for at least an immediate ceasefire. Right now, a resolution the U.S. abstained from voting on, and it got passed. So at least for the holy month of Ramadan, there's a ceasefire. There's access to aid for Palestinians that are on the brink of starvation. How much has changed on the ground in Gaza with respect to Israel's actions?
Yes, actually, the change is completely negative for the Palestinian people, as the Israeli occupation forces ramped up and scaled up their attacks and massacres against the Palestinian people in a way that defies the resolution, the UN resolution that demanded the ceasefire during Ramadan month. As you know, that this is not bizarre for the Israeli occupation forces, and they sent their clear message for the international community, for the entire world, that the Israeli occupation forces is above the law, and they do not care about the UN resolutions, and the only thing they do care about is to continue committing more crimes against the Palestinian people and to kill as many as possible of the Palestinian people. And this is actually what is happening on the ground. Since that resolution was passed, we are noticing that the Israeli occupation forces are committing and committing more crimes against the Palestinian people. So this is the policy of the Israeli occupation forces. They are racing counter the clock in order to raise the death toll of the Palestinian people and inflict more destruction and havoc across all areas of Gaza Strip.
All right, Moti, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musab, they're joining us from the besieged Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, lack of food and essential nutrients in war-ravaged Gaza is causing the death of children and newborns. The humanitarian and health catastrophe has been a daily struggle for children fighting for life. Leila Janid, a two-month-old Palestinian toddler, was born throughout this ongoing Gaza onslaught. She suffers from severe malnutrition.
We received this case about an hour ago, a malnutrition case. We got used to receiving such cases daily. This case is generally suffering from malnutrition as a result of lack of nutrients she's receiving. You can tell that her age doesn't match her weight. The case I received is 2 months old and she's only 2 kilos. I can say, especially about the cases I dealt with in this department, the intensive care department, that they are malnutrition cases. They come in with difficult scenarios, with evident signs of severe dehydration, and therefore they need to be admitted to intensive care. Let me mention an important point. Throughout my work in this department, in a northern Gaza hospital, we got used to receiving such cases in large numbers every day. The end result of those cases is death. Therefore, considering my experience and my work here, if things persist this way, the situation will deteriorate and get worse. There is no good consequences, especially in northern Gaza. In northern Gaza, I see similar cases every day. It's a daily struggle. My shift in the intensive care does not go without 3 or 4 cases of this kind. From bad to worse, and the result is death.
New al-Hamas has hailed the ruling by the International Court of Justice ordering the Israeli regime to address famine in Gaza. The resistance group has called on the international community to create a mechanism and ensure the order's implementation. In a statement, Hamas said Israel must be forced to immediately execute the court's order. It said Israel is a fascist occupation entity that uses starvation as a weapon against civilians. Hamas lamented the regime has consistently disregarded all international resolutions, including the recent resolution by the UN Security Council calling for a humanitarian ceasefire. The group said U.S. cover for Israel's made the terrorist regime behave in such a way as if it is above the law and accountability. The reaction comes after the ICJ ordered Israel to allow immediate delivery of humanitarian territory. Court said fan from a risk into a chronic crisis for the civilian population. Court's order urged Israel to ensure unhindered provision of aid and medical supplies to Palestinians. President of the international medical charity Doctors Without Borders, no change on the ground in Gaza, decision calling for an immediate ceasefire and flow of aid. Have a listen.
We haven't seen any change after this resolution on the ground. We haven't seen any impact in the people's lives, any impact in our aid. The situation asks remain the same. And these are the sustained, immediate. We want to stop being facilities with medical staff. We have to protect health care in Gazan population. And we would humanitarian aid delivery in Gaza at this moment, which is not the case at all. We try also to meet health needs. And I will give you an example that really shocked the international community when they saw that pregnant women, that they have to undergo a cesarean section, they had to be literally kicked out of the hospital after a couple of hours because there were no beds. Now MSF has increased the capacity of beds in order to offer at least some quality of care to these women.
Limited access to clean water amid unrelenting Israeli bombardment poses a serious risk to Gazans throughout the besieged territory. Some displaced Palestinians explain their sufferings and how they struggle with access to drinkable water.
There is no fresh water in the school that shelters refugees. That's why we come here to fill water. It comes only half an hour a day. Water in the school is undrinkable. It's salty. What can we do? We have to walk 1 kilometer to get water.
People are suffering because of lack of water, considering it's salty too. We fill water in gallons instead of water tanks. It is really a suffering when it comes to obtaining fresh water. We have to queue for everything. We walk for an hour in total. Sometimes we return empty-handed without water.
We are in the month of Ramadan and we are struggling to get water to our homes. It is difficult and we are suffering from a great deal of hardship. We don't even have food to give us the energy to go collect the water, let alone the innocent children, women, and the elderly.
Our problem with water has been a serious problem since the war began. Not just today. We are suffering a lot from water because all pipes and pumps stopped working since the beginning of the war.
More than 140 Christian leaders from throughout the world have called for a comprehensive and permanent ceasefire in Gaza and end to foreign military support for the Israeli regime. In a letter, the group slammed empty rhetoric of world leaders who ignore underlying causes of the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. The Christian leaders said Israel's daily bombings and its shutting off the basic life-sustaining services to Gazans are the direct causes of the crisis. The letter urged world leaders not to be silent as people continue to die. It demanded an end to Israel's atrocities, violence, death, and destruction in Gaza. The Christian leaders also called for immediate and adequate humanitarian assistance to more than 2 million Palestinians. Political commentator Charlie Cates says organizations and institutions throughout the world are recognizing the reality of Israel's genocide taking place in Gaza.
Well, it's certainly significant and reflective of the fact that organizations and institutions around the world can recognize the reality that's in front of all of our eyes. That is that the Zionist regime is committing genocide in Gaza on a daily basis, and that the Palestinian people are facing a genocidal regime. Now, of course, there are Muslims, Christians, Jews, people of all and no faiths around the world who are taking to the streets, mobilizing and organizing. In North America, many Christian organizations are having processions to stop the genocide in Gaza this weekend for Easter weekend. I mean, it's been, churches have been bombed and targeted by the occupation in Gaza. So it's about time that that Christian leadership are following in the footsteps of Christian populations and communities who have been coming out and participating in mass in the major demonstrations that have been taking place in essentially every capital and major city in the world for the past 6 months. The reason is clear, the answer is clear, this is genocide. In terms of whether it's going to have an effect, I mean, every institution taking a position, it's time to really step up the position and also implement a boycott of Israel, a boycott of so-called interfaith activities that serve only not to actually bring people of all faiths together, but serve the purpose of whitewashing the Zionist regime and the Israeli occupation.
Israel's launched a fresh air attack on Syria, this time targeting a number of locations in the northwestern city of Aleppo. According to Syrian military, attack left a number of civilians and military personnel casualties and wounded and damaged some public and private property. Military said Israeli aggression coincided with a drone attack by terrorist organizations launched from Idlib and the western countryside of Aleppo. It added that the terrorists intended to target civilians in Aleppo and its surroundings. In the past, Damascus said such coincided attacks by Israel and the terrorists shows the close coordination between the two. The Syrians also said repeated Israeli aggression is aimed at propping up terrorists in the Arab country. And now for a fifth straight night, hundreds of Jordanians have demonstrated near the Israeli embassy in Amman to voice support for Palestinians in Gaza. The protesters oppose normalization of Jordan's relations with Israel while strongly condemning regime's crimes in Gaza, especially its brutal attacks on hospitals. Protesters chanted slogans against carrying and or while carrying placards and waving Palestinian and Jordanian flags. They also reiterated their demand for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and closure of the Israeli embassy. The Jordanian riot police, however, blocked their march toward the regime's embassy. Now, for months now, Jordanians have been calling on their authorities to cancel all treaties with Israel and not allow the country to be a transit route for goods into Israel. Jordan, which hosts over 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed numerous pro-Palestine rallies since Israel launched its onslaught on Gaza in early October. Nearly 6 months into the U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide on Gaza, a recent poll shows support for resistance remains high among Palestinians. According to latest data, two-thirds of Palestinians believe October 7th Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was a correct move. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of after the annihilation of all things. The all-knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Ayahs, 30 days. The Almighty, upon creation of the world, determined the night of Qadr, or the night of ordainment. The night of Qadr is the time when all affairs of one year are determined or ordained. These affairs are ordained through the angels, who are sent down by God to the perfect man of every time. The perfect men, for sure, have been the prophets who succeeded one after another to take over the waiting mission of inviting and guiding people to the way of Allah. However, people were informed of this blessed night only by the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. That's why Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, Allah presented the night of Qadr to my Ummah. Tonight is the first night of Qadr. Stay with us for a special feature in this regard. This is indeed the 18th episode of our Ramadan special series. The Night of Qadr, also known as the Night of Power or the Night of Ordainment, is a very strange night. One of the surahs of the Holy Quran is called Surah Qadr. It reads, "Indeed, we sent the Quran down on the Night of Qadr. What will show you what is the Night of Qadr? The Night of Qadr is better than 1,000 nights. In it, the angels and the spirit descend, by the leave of their Lord, with every command. It is peaceful until the rising of the dawn." The Almighty God reveals in other ayahs that the Night of Qadr falls on the blessed month of Ramadan. In ayah 185 of Surah Baqara, we read, "The month of Ramadan is the one in which the Quran was sent down as guidance to mankind. So let those of you who witness it fast in it." According to a hadith, the books of prophets Noah, Abraham, and the Torah of Prophet Moses, and the Evangel of Prophet Jesus were revealed in Ramadan because it is the noblest of months. And the noblest time in this month is the Night of Qadr. The Holy Quran too was revealed to the Holy Prophet's heart on this night. Ramadan is the time of sublimity of human spirit. This sublimity will not be attained except through jihad against carnal desires. Once a number of Muslims returned from jihad, armed combat with enemies, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, told them, "Well done to the group who has passed the minor jihad and the greater jihad remains for them." They asked about the greater jihad, to which the Holy Prophet answered, "It means jihad or struggle against the self or carnal desires." The struggle against carnal desires of the self is much harder than fighting the outward visible enemy. Human beings sometimes consider evil desires as their own desires, while in fact they distance us from the essence of humanity. As long as these desires dominate us, our humanity is like a captive and a slave who has no chance for growth and sublimity. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the best servant of Allah, whose heart was the place of reception of the Holy Quran. The greatest value for the Night of Qadr, or the Night of Power, or the Night of Ordainment, is the sending down of the Holy Quran. Since the beginning of creation, this night has been the time of ordainment and measurement of every affair for the following year. These affairs depend on our deeds in the previous year. The point to note is that our fate for the next year is not clear to us. But there is one person in every Night of Qadr who is aware of the fate of whole people and whatever is going to take place in the world. He is Allah's representative on planet Earth. He is the man to whom the angels and the spirit come down and inform him of whatsoever is going to happen to the entire universe in the coming year. Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has narrated that the Holy Prophet was several times asked on the cause of this, crying after reciting of Surah Qadr. The Holy Prophet would answer, "I cry for what I have seen with my eyes and understand with my heart, for what Ali's heart will receive after me." Then he took Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib's head in his lap and said, "Know that the man to whom the command is sent down after me is this man." According to the evidence, the Holy Prophet meant that he had been informed of what would befall Imam Ali on the Night of Qadr in future, which would lead to his martyrdom. The loyal companion of the Holy Prophet, Abu Zar Ghaffari, asked him if the Night of God was exclusively related to the time of the prophets, or it would continue, to which the Prophet answered, "The Night of God remains until the Day of Judgment." The Night of God, or the Night of Power, or the Night of Ordainment, is repeated every year. So there should be a representative for God in every year. Otherwise, to whom will the angels and the spirit descend? To whom will they give the command, affairs and fate of every creature? The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, said, "The Night of God exists in every year. On this night, the affairs of the whole year and the fates are sent down. After the passing away of the Holy Prophet, I and my 11 children are the owners of this night." The 11th descendant of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, is Imam Mahdi. May God expedite his reappearance. He is the vicegerent of Allah on earth. He is the owner of the Night of Qadr. Thus, the angels and the spirit descend to him every year to present to him the affairs of every year. So, we raise our hands and pray for his health and reappearance on this blessed night of Qadr.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Without preamble, American movements regarding the ceasefire and the exchange of prisoners in the Gaza Strip have resumed, suggesting the possibility of a breakthrough soon, especially as the head of the Mossad, David Bernia, headed to Qatar last week to meet with the American, Egyptian, and Qatari mediators. This comes amidst leaks attributed to Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about immense American pressure being exerted on the mediators to achieve a breakthrough, while the Palestinian resistance Hamas has not issued any official statement regarding the resumption of negotiations. When Bernier returned to Zionist Israel from Doha last Tuesday after hours of arriving there, where he held indirect negotiations with a Hamas delegation mediated by Egypt and Qatar in the absence of the American delegation, Israeli media reflected the failure of those negotiations. However, this time, Bernier met in Doha with Director of the CIA, William Burns, and the Qatari Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, and the head of the Egyptian intelligence, Abbas Kamel. On the eve of his departure, Netanyahu met with Bernier at a time when the Israeli entity Channel 12 spoke of immense American pressure on the mediators to start moving quickly, adding that members of the war cabinet, Yoav Gallant, Benny Gantz, and Gadi Eisenkot, heard about the Mossad chief's departure to Doha from the media, indicating that Netanyahu monopolizes the management of the negotiation file, which is more extreme than the other members of the cabinet, which may limit optimism. Now, the level of U.S. pressure on Zionist Israel is reflected in Blinken's request to participate in two meetings with the Israeli entity War Cabinet and the Ministerial Committee for National Security, which were scheduled to take place last Thursday and were suddenly postponed. Additionally, Blinken's visit included a meeting with ministers from a number of Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Jordan, and the Secretary General of the Executive Committee of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Hossein Sheikh. It has become known that when these ministers attend a meeting, discussions about the day after the Gaza war are on the agenda, in which they are intended to participate in terms of arrangement and funding to ensure first and foremost Zionist Israel's interests. What is clear from all of this is that there is intense and pressing American movement in an attempt to reach arrangements, not only linked to the risks events in the Middle East posed to U.S. interests, but also reflecting on President Joe Biden's performance in the upcoming U.S. presidential elections on the 5th of next November. It's difficult to imagine reaching election day amid a war that could completely change the electoral landscape, especially if Arab and Islamic origin voters and others affected by events in Gaza refrain from going to the polls on the promised day, making Biden an easy prey for his competitor, Donald Trump. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Unless sudden changes occur, it seems that the temporary truce in the Gaza Strip will take shape within a few days if the occupation entity is still showing resistance and prolonging the negotiations in an effort to limit the demands of the Hamas movement. The former will agree in the end to the ceasefire, which imposes on its occupation army weeks of relative calm. That's all a probability. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Mohammed Hassan Sweidan, a strategic studies researcher, a writer for different media platforms, and the author of several studies in the field of international relations. A pleasure having you with us, Mr. Sweidan. Now, is there a real change in the American stance towards Zionist Israel, or is it just verbal pressure to try and deceive the American voters to make them vote for Biden in the upcoming elections in November? And if so, does Biden really think the American voter is that naive?
First of all, thank you for having me here. As a matter of fact, of course, there is no change regarding the American stance towards Zionist Israel. It's the real change is towards Netanyahu and Netanyahu's government, and we should be able to differentiate between the two things. The main problem Biden faces today is that he needs to pressure Netanyahu while not affecting Israel, and that's why he doesn't have a lot of tools, you know, because many people ask, why doesn't the U.S. just stop giving military support or military aid to Israel? And that's why, because Biden has needs to pressure Netanyahu without having any effect on Israel, and that's why he has only few tools to use in that situation. So we can't speak about divergence or a change in the view of Israel in the U.S., but the main problem is with Netanyahu, and that's because Netanyahu isn't applying the American strategies. Mm-hmm. There is a divergence between the two regarding how to finish or how to achieve the goal of the war. They both agree, and here we have to state that. Both Biden and Netanyahu agree on the goal of the war, which is the destruction of Hamas. We always hear Biden speaking about the same goal of Netanyahu, but how to achieve this goal is where they both divert. Because Biden believes that the U.S. today has a historic chance to complete the normalization process through dragging Saudi Arabia towards a normalization deal with Israel. Also, that he has a historic chance to end the Palestinian case by establishing make sure to say an unarmed Palestinian state, which means a Palestinian state with no sovereignty. Netanyahu's strategies, his military strategies, his insistence of going into Rafah and continuing the military campaign threatens what the U.S. is trying to achieve and threatens the U.S. strategies. And this is what the U.S. have been working years ago from 2020, from the first normalization process when it starts till today. Netanyahu is threatening this whole process, and that's why these diversions occur. And it's only between Biden and Netanyahu, not between Israel as an entity.
But at the same time, we have upcoming moves that include milestones for both entities, such as the visit of Yoav Gallant, the Israeli entity warrant minister to the Pentagon, and as well as discussions by Israeli entity delegations, which are agreed to be sent to Washington to discuss the last call that happened between Biden and Netanyahu concerning not going through with the invasion of Rafah. Why does that sound like the real deal there, like the real negotiations happening there, not in Qatar, not in the UNSC? This is how it sounds.
Yes, because as you have stated, I think that the negotiations in the U.S. are of the same importance as those in Qatar, in Doha. You know, the real negotiations also, as you stated, is in the U.S. because what's happening in the U.S. is that the United States is Biden's administration trying to pull Netanyahu and his government, pull Israel out of a strategic defeat. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told the Israelis before, we are trying to, please don't change a tactical win to a strategic defeat. Negotiations in the U.S. target to just give Israel this strategic win. And that's why they are of much importance. If Israel abide by the American strategies, then pressure will de-escalate. But if it doesn't abide, if Netanyahu insists on continuing with his own strategies, with his own military campaign, with entering into Rafah, then we will have an escalation between Biden, a political escalation between Biden and Netanyahu. That's why the negotiations in the U.S. are really important. There are two things that may lead out of these negotiations. First, these negotiations will decide whether political pressure will increase between Biden and Netanyahu, and second, to what extent the war will continue, because what the U.S. wants from these negotiations is to lead to a ceasefire inside Gaza. And this ceasefire, of course, isn't related to what the people on Gaza needs. It's serving the Israelis' interests as the U.S. sees them. Whereas if these negotiations fail, then Netanyahu will proceed with his military campaign, and this threatens an escalation in the whole region. And that's why I think if negotiations in Qatar need to work, then they have to be achieved in the U.S. first, and that's why they are of much importance.
Anyway, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammad Hassan Swaydan, a strategic studies researcher, writer for different media platforms, and author of several studies in the field of international relations, for being with us discussing this pressing issue, hoping for a ceasefire for our brothers and sisters in Gaza the way that they see fit. Thank you very much for your contribution. Now, ladies and gents, stay tuned, because next we are going to discuss an end of an era for Netanyahu.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Before the Al-Aqsa flood battle and the ensuing war of extermination launched by the Zionist Israeli occupation army, and during the battle, the tendency of most analysts, commentators, and observers focused on the role of the extremist Israeli prime minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his dangerous and harmful policies. So much so that it seemed to many that removing him as leader of a racist right-wing regime in this entity would open the doors to finding a political solution to the war of extermination in Gaza and the West Bank. But is this true, though? More details in the following report.
Can Benjamin Netanyahu emerge victorious from the genocidal war he is currently waging on the Gaza Strip? I believe he genuinely thinks so, and he seems convinced that the objectives he has set for this war are not only realistic, but also achievable. This explains his stubborn insistence on rejecting a ceasefire before his occupation army manages to retrieve all the captives held in the Strip, destroy the military infrastructure of Hamas, topple its rule in the area, and install an alternative authority willing to cooperate with the Zionist entity on security matters, with its primary mission being the protection of this entity from any resistance retaliations in the future. Many observers and officials have hinted repeatedly that getting rid of Netanyahu is step one to finding a political solution to the genocidal war in Gaza and the West Bank, perhaps even to open up prospects for an acceptable and reasonable settlement in a prisoner exchange deal between resistance movements in Gaza and the Israeli entity. Western media outlets, along with statements from some Western officials, such as the European Union's Foreign Minister Joseph Borrell, and his statements opposing Netanyahu's obstinacy, have fueled this inclination among some. The truth is that this kind of analysis and commentary diverts attention from the reality of this racist entity in its body, mind, and spirit. Especially after tens of millions of free people from all corners of the earth demonstrated their support for the Palestinian cause overall, protesting for over 5 months or more in all Western, African, Asian, European, and Latin American cities and capitals against the scale of crime and brutality perpetrated by Zionist Israel through all its political, military, and media institutions, especially in the Gaza Strip. This trend represents a misguided direction and a deviated compass from the essence and reality of the Israeli occupation's political structure, which began its history before 1948 with massacres and crimes, and continued as such throughout 75 years of the Arab-Zionist conflict. The truth is that this statement overlooks a set of fundamental historic and current realities, such as, firstly, neglecting without awareness the reality and essence of the natural origins of this entity and its crimes. Secondly, ignoring the demographic and ideological qualitative shift that has occurred during the past 40 years. Thirdly, overlooking the transformation in the political and party structure within the Israeli entity itself. And this superior approach persisted in every attack and aggression carried out by Israeli occupation forces against Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza. Massacres and civilian killings were repeated in all these cases, totaling more than 1,200 invasion, aggression, and massacre incidents against neighbors since 1947 until the eve of the current aggression on Gaza since October 8, 2023, during which, in just 160 days, over 2,300 massacres were committed, resulting in more than 35,000 Palestinian martyrs, in addition to 71,000 wounded. The Israeli Zionists considered these massacres against Arabs, including Palestinians, as one of the pillars of the Israeli entity deterrence theory. Through a policy of terror and intimidation, the dream of building this Hebrew state is realized.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs. A pleasure for having you with us, Mr. Hassan. Now, Netanyahu faces an inescapable dilemma. His government is threatened with collapse whether it accepts or rejects any formula proposed by the resistance in Palestine. Consequently, early elections in Zionist Israel are highly likely at the moment in the upcoming months, which will inevitably lead to Netanyahu's disappearance from all the Zionist political scene. But is that enough to demote the risk on Gaza and the West Bank? Or is the problem not only Netanyahu and his coalition?
Benjamin Netanyahu undoubtedly plays a fundamental role at this level in prolonging the war. This issue is a fundamental issue and a crucial knot in not stopping this battle. Netanyahu's staying in power is intertwined with the continuation of the fighting. If things head towards early elections and Netanyahu is forced out of power through the ballot boxes, this issue may affect the shape and course of the battle. Netanyahu is leading a battle for his political life at this level, and he fully realizes that the end of the war will lead him to be held accountable and tried. This issue will have decisive repercussions on his fate and his political trajectory. From this perspective, undoubtedly, early elections, if held during the war, will have significant implications at this level. Even though the other leaders still adhere to the issue of the battle's objectives and the elimination of Hamas, and they may align with the direction supported by the American administration regarding the exit from the war and the search for political solutions through agreement with the Palestinians on a formula for the next phase of the war. This is what Netanyahu currently rejects. From this perspective, Netanyahu may play a fundamental and decisive role at this level, whereby the issue of the battle's continuation is linked to his staying in power, while if he leaves this authority, alternatives and formulas may already be found through which the new authority can find ways to end the war and claim that it has achieved at least part of the objectives and goals it was seeking.
But this puts it at a very important question, which is one of the leading Zionist national security theories, which has always been to implement massacres in the arenas of their enemies and their adversaries, especially among civilians, in order to instill the element of terror, of being intimidated in the mind and consciousness of the people that they are fighting. They have succeeded in doing so, sadly, with an unprecedented scale of genocide in Gaza over the past 6 months. But do you think that this is what is considered a success inside of the Zionist entity community, if I may, despite the fact that they know that the objectives set by the regime were never met?
This issue relates to what the occupation terms deterrence in Zionist military theory, which dictates causing comprehensive destruction and notifying the other party that it will pay unbearable prices and cannot coexist with it if it chooses to confront the Zionist entity. From this perspective, the occupation sought to commit this enormous level of massacres and this high level of killing, destruction, and displacement of the Palestinian people. However, at this level, the occupation may have collided, despite the horror of the scenes in terms of human losses and destruction in Palestinian buildings and infrastructure. It collided with a state of resilience, endurance, and patience that the Palestinian people demonstrated in the face of this massive and terrifying massacre. From this perspective, Palestinians managed to cope with this level of fighting, and the matter was extremely painful, but their resilience on the ground, enduring the environment, and the resistance fighters' resilience prevented the occupation from achieving what the Zionist entity and Benjamin Netanyahu specifically called a decisive and final victory. Netanyahu has set a fundamental condition that cannot be achieved in any way, even in the view of various circles within the occupation entity, because he will not be able to eliminate Palestinian resistance, which continues to fight on all fronts despite 6 months passing since the battle. This issue confirms that the Zionist strategy has failed and that the theory of victory that Benjamin Netanyahu talks about will remain distant, and that the Palestinians have a long breath to continue fighting and are willing to make more sacrifices, and they will not raise the white flag, as many Zionist experts claim. This confirms that the occupation will not dream or taste the sweetness of victory in facing the Palestinians, but will encounter resistance in its various forms everywhere. We must take, for example, what happened in Al-Shifa Hospital after the occupation entered it in the previous period and claimed to have ended its work there. Now, it returns to this place to face persistent resistance and relentless fighting, indicating that the military operations, in the manner pursued by the occupation and utilizing all military capabilities and energies at its disposal, did not achieve its objectives, and that the victory Netanyahu talks about will be very distant.
Well, it is worth noting here that Benjamin Netanyahu has remained throughout his years in power since 1993, working and maneuvering to achieve two main goals for the Zionist entity. One, completely liquidating the Palestinian cause, and two, integrating Zionist Israel with the region by normalization at the same time, doing both goals at the same time. He always believed, and he still, by the way, believes that he could do that, that he is the only one capable of actually achieving those two goals. However, after Gaza 2023-2024, what do you think the legacy of Netanyahu will be after he gets either ousted or removed from power?
The reality of the normalization project, sponsored by the administrations of former President Donald Trump and current President Joe Biden, aligns perfectly with Benjamin Netanyahu's vision, who seeks to gain relations with Arab states in the surrounding region and the Gulf, But at the same time, he does not want to offer anything to the Palestinians. Netanyahu clearly adopted this theory and stated that we will go for settlement and normalization with the Arabs, leaving the Palestinians behind so that they eventually have no choice but to follow us and accept the conditions we offer. Netanyahu's theory now clearly states that he does not want to recognize any form of authority for the Palestinians or any form of sovereignty over any geographic area, neither in the West Bank nor in Gaza. Yet he aspires to continue the path of normalization with the Arabs. This issue will remain on the table in the future stage. Some Arab parties, led by Saudi Arabia, have expressed their rejection of this principle and stated that they will not accept normalization unless the Palestinians obtain something. This issue cannot be accepted by the Arab public opinion in any way that fully harmonizes with Netanyahu's direction at this level. Netanyahu may have put the occupation and this entity on this path into crisis in the next stage because the level of confrontation that generated this kind of crime and Zionist destruction and this image of this entity at the level of Arab and Islamic public opinion will create a significant obstacle for any Arab state that may resort to normalization. After this massive massacre, it might be difficult at this level unless a power within the occupation entity accepts making concessions. However, it seems that we are now seeing the political level moving towards more right-wing extremism and racism, as the Knesset rejected recognizing any form of Palestinian state last month. This confirms that Benjamin Netanyahu has left extremist marks on Zionist policy that will not serve the occupation in the long run, but rather increase its isolation and prevent it from achieving what is called integration at the regional level.
Well, Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs, I want to thank you very much for your time and contribution discussing with us an end of an era for a war criminal, a genocidal war criminal like Benjamin Netanyahu. Thank you for your time and effort, ladies and gents. Thank you. Please stay tuned as we bring you the latest from West Asia right here on the Mideast Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint. A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize a movie with religious or spiritual themes. Well, for that, in fact, we decided to criticize a movie in that line of, you know, religious nature, which is called Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastroianni. It's about a school teacher by the name of John Woodson who loses his job and decides to visit Peru and, you know, to look for a manuscript, and that leads him, in fact, to a kind of awakening. I invited two of my friends and guests or guest speakers to the studio again, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, my dear brother.
Welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah, salam alaykum. Welcome to the studio.
Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Before I ask you questions regarding the criticism of the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, let's take a short break by listening to a part of this movie, and then we'll be back and continue the program Viewpoint on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
your fingers together like this.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're going to look at the space between your fingers.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. We are criticizing the movie Celestine Prophecy, produced in 2006, directed by Armand Mastrione, with the help of my friends and guest speakers in the studio, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Riyasir. Sayyid Abdullah, what's the overall message of the movie, or